Welcome back to Will I Ever Learn Chinese? I'm Jeanette Seikel, and in this sixth episode, I'm going to look at finding the right approach and reflecting on your learning, continuously adjusting to what you're doing. Chinese has a lot of words that look and sound very similar, and these are called homophones in linguistic terms. And some of these homophones may have different tones, but sometimes the homophones even turn out to have the same tones and sound entirely the same. Some of these I came across pretty much at the beginning of my learning journey, and they did confuse me immensely. To my surprise, they were so common that they appeared everywhere, all the time. For example, I soon realized that Chinese needs an extra word when numbers are used, which cannot be left out. This word seems to appear between the number and the noun, similar to the English measure words such as bunch, flock, punnet, and so on, in a bunch of grapes, a flock of birds, two punnets of blueberries. Just like in the English examples just given, different measures seem to be used with different nouns, but I could not quite figure out how they were distributed. For now, I was simply just accepting that Chinese was doing something slightly differently and went with the flow. But, of course, I was curious. Being a linguist, I had some suspicions as to what was going on here. I had heard of languages having so-called numeral classifiers, these little measuring words that would appear together with numbers, giving an insight into some form of category the noun may belong to, such as something long, someone human, something used as a tool, or the like. I also knew that some languages had other types of classifiers that appear independent of numbers, and I had indeed encountered those before. Classifiers are usually treated together with categories like grammatical gender, like in Spanish, la casa, the house, is feminine, and el camino, the road, is masculine. Gender is pretty arbitrary. Is there anything about the house that is feminine? Or is there anything about the road that is masculine as such? Usually not. However, the type of classification system I was now encountering in Chinese was a bit more obvious and wasn't quite as random as gender, the gender I knew from European languages. So, as I was beginning to learn Chinese, I happened to learn a fair few nouns in context with numbers, and there were various expressions that seemed to appear. So, for example, 一个人 was accompanied by a picture of one person. So, it was likely to be translated as one person. Then there was a picture of two people, followed by 两个人. Three people, in turn, were 三个人. Likewise, 一个孩子, a child, 两个孩子, two children. They were all with the number 一, and then some element 个 that appeared after the 一. And this was some sort of classification system, I suspected. I seem to be right in my suspicion, as other nouns seem to be accompanied by different measure words, such as 一支笔, a pen, 两支笔, two pens, and 一只猫, a cat, 两只猫, two cats. And then there was 一本书, a book, 两本书, two books. So 一 seemed to be one, 两 seemed to be two, and then depending on the category of the noun that these would appear with, they would appear with different classifiers. I concluded that 个 must appear with people, as in 一个人, one person. 只 must appear with small things, like pens, 一支笔, and 本 maybe with written materials, 一本书, a book. My hypothesis, however, did not stand for very long, as there were just too many counterexamples. For example, there was 一个鸡蛋, an egg. So, unless we classify egg as something that is living, which I guess it is, my hypothesis that 个 would appear with humans did not really hold. So maybe 个 was just used with living things. But actually, I very soon found further examples, such as 一个苹果, an apple, and 一个三明治, a sandwich. So 个 seemed to be used with these seemingly non-living entities as well. I had to revise my hypothesis as to when 个 was used, and only later did I find out that 个 was actually the most commonly used and also the most generic of all the classifiers. So whenever in doubt, I could just use it and not worry too much. This was actually very, very welcome as I was learning the language. But when I learned about vehicles, something odd happened, and I started to get confused. I learned the word 车, which means car, and 自行车, which means bicycle. And when these were used in context with numbers, they appeared like this. 一辆车, a car. 两辆车, two cars. 一辆自行车, one bicycle. 两辆自行车, two bicycles. Wow, what was going on here? 两 seems to be repeated when there were two cars or two bicycles. 两辆车, two cars. Does that mean that the number two could be used in this environment, meaning both the classification of a car and the number? Well, there seemed to be different tone marks for these two, so they were pronounced ever so slightly differently, but I couldn't really hear that at the time. At this point, I was getting more and more confused, but help came in a rather unexpected way. As I described earlier, my learning program was mainly targeting speaking and listening skills, but I had ticked all those other boxes wanting to learn a little bit of the reading and writing as well. I was in a section where the writing was taught, and I learned that there were two different characters for liang, the number, and liang, the classifier. They looked slightly similar. Liang was this weird little character with a top bar, two little things hanging off it inside what looked like a room. This was for the number two, and it looked a bit like the number two because there were these two hanging little things. Liang, the classifier, the numeral classifier used with cars, had this little number two in it as well, but there was something else at the front. And when looking at the construction, Liang Liang Che, two cars, I realized that that bit at the front of the numeral classifier Liang was actually a slightly squashed version of the character for car. So Liang Liang Che, two cars, had the number two, it had the car, they had their individual characters, but the numeral classifier in the middle was just a squashed car followed by a slightly squashed number two, making up one character in its own right. So Liang, those two words that I had initially assumed was just one word, were in fact two words written very differently, using different characters in Chinese. The characters may be related to one another in one way or another, but they were nonetheless different characters. And this way I could disambiguate the two. After that, I started to pay more attention to the writing system, and I looked at some of the words I had learned to date. And some of those, it turned out, were two different words as well, rather than one, as I had initially assumed. For example, there was this little word zi, which initially I knew was a numeral classifier in some way, and initially I had assumed was used with small things, such as in 一支笔, one pencil, 两支笔, two pencils, 一支毛, one cat, 两支毛, two cats. I had assumed that 支 was one word, when in fact there were two different words because the characters were different. Upon closer inspection, I realized that the tones were different as well, so again I hadn't quite picked up on that distinction. Succumbing and looking them up online, I learned that one, 字, was used with long inflexible objects, so this was used with pencil. The other one, with the totally different characters and pronounced slightly differently with a different tone, 字, was used with cat and with other animals such as birds and dogs and even tiger. At this stage, I realized a number of things. There are a lot of words in Chinese that may sound the same, or at least look the same on the surface. There may be small differences, such as in tone. Yet, when looking at the way they are written in Chinese characters, they're not the same at all. Ultimately, if I wanted to learn Chinese without getting confused about these similar forms, I'd have to learn to read and write. I also realized that learning to read and write might be fun and intriguing, and possibly not as scary as I had initially thought. I found the link between the two types of liang interesting, linking ka and tu to express a measure word that in the character was squashing these two separate words and characters together. And also there were similarities in the pronunciations of characters that looked very similar, and I found that very intriguing. Indeed, Chinese characters seem to reflect elements of sound and meaning that had, prior to this realization, totally escaped me. So I was intrigued. I wanted to find out more. And I started to eagerly embrace my learning program sessions on reading and writing. But I soon found out that the way this was built up in this specific program was not very intuitive. Written characters were introduced, but not explained in any way, which I guess was a feature of the program. And most of them looked extremely similar to me. I felt like there must be a better way to learn to read and write. Here, we could ask the question whether I took the right path from the beginning. Maybe I just chose the wrong learning program and would have fared much better having chosen a different one. So, in hindsight, were the methods I chose appropriate? I'll argue that whatever method you are choosing to start with is in fact not that important. Yes, there will be a difference here or there. And obviously I had thought about my methods quite carefully to ensure I would be able to learn the tones, something I personally found very difficult. But for the beginning learner, it's not that crucial to get it perfectly right from the beginning, and reflect on what you're learning and adjust it along the way if it doesn't work out. So if one method isn't very good, I'm sure there will be another method out there. Let's look at an analogy. Imagine going on a backpacking holiday and pondering the ins and outs of different hotels. One is very expensive and promises a luxurious stay. The other one is a cheap homestay. Then there are in-between options, some close to sites you're planning to see, others near good restaurants, yet others in easy reach of the train station. Which one do you choose? Of course, it depends on your preferences and needs. If traveling by train and only stopping briefly overnight, the convenient option near the station may seem more appropriate than the expensive resort, which you would not be able to take full advantage of. You may be very attracted to the cozy homestay option, but imagine arriving at the place and it looking nothing like the online pictures. The owners immediately give you a host of rules to adhere to, and you realize that you would not enjoy the stay very much. Unless you have paid for the stay in advance and can't afford to do so, you can always move on and find somewhere else to stay. Analogies only ever work so far, of course. But what I'm trying to say here is that you can remain flexible in your learning without feeling weighed down by choices early on. If something is not working, or even if you're not very comfortable with your choice, you can go and find another way to learn the language. As with so many things in life, there are advantages and disadvantages to each learning method, just like hotels can each have their own advantages and disadvantages. Do the hotels fulfill their purpose? Well, for the staying overnight bit, provided the place is safe, they do. The same is the case when learning languages. Many methods will probably work as a start, unless they are demotivating you, in which case you should consider moving on to something else straight away. If you are at all unsure about which method to choose, my advice would be to just go for it and randomly select one method to see how it works. The most important step is getting started. The rest can be adjusted. Motivation can be achieved in a number of ways, such as through daily reminders, competing with friends or even total strangers. It can also be achieved through seeing yourself progress. Maybe you're doing something you really enjoy, like watching films or carrying out a hobby using the language. What motivates one person may not necessarily motivate another, so it's about finding a way that works for you. Upon hearing I was learning Chinese, many friends and colleagues would share their experiences with language learning. Many of them, it turned out, were using apps that teach language through translation of short sentences. This way, it appears, you build up a considerable amount of vocabulary right from the start. What is great about these apps is that they are typically taking a very gamified approach, just like my program, but in a slightly different way. So, this basically means they hook you in to come back every day for rewards, which is inherently motivating to us, isn't it? It's human nature, we just like those presents. One type of reward is given when you come back daily, giving you a so-called streak of play, meaning you have played once every day for a certain amount of time. I know of friends who are hooked on these streaks, and they will do everything to log into their account once daily, even in situations where they may not have good access to the internet, such as hiking in the Alps or confined to a hospital bed just after an operation. Being hooked in this way can be great, as it will keep you going. But are you going to learn the language this way? For me, personally, these types of apps are not very effective for language learning. They can be great if you want to maintain languages you have learned previously, or if you would like to learn translating little sentences back and forth. But I think there are many other ways of learning languages that are better suited. Using these apps is not inherently wrong, especially if you use them alongside other methods. But you, like me, may find that they get a bit repetitive and ultimately boring. If, however, these apps motivate you to keep going, well, that's great. In the end, it's not the details of the different learning methods that count, but the daily interaction in the language and the motivation to keep learning. A colleague of mine spent some time using such a translation app and shared his observations on social media. He was keen to brush up his Italian to speak to his in-laws in Italy, but he was left frustrated by the lack in relevance of what he was translating, as well as the very slow progress he was making. Most importantly, he felt that while he was able to translate sentences out of context without much difficulty, as soon as he was confronted with fast-spoken Italian and different dialects and accents, he was totally lost. As a linguist, he was able to reflect on his learning and critically evaluate what he was doing. Yet, other friends with different backgrounds have been left frustrated, thinking they were not good at learning languages. What I have heard a lot is that friends have been using the apps for a long time, sometimes even years, but they still can't speak the language very well. Are they just not talented when it comes to language learning? Where have they gone wrong? In fact, they are doing the right thing. They're on the way. They may just want to supplement their one method with others that keep them motivated and get them to come back to the language daily, such as watching movies, listening to podcasts, and similar. Whatever materials are available for the language and however they are most motivated to engage with that language. Some people also do not realize how much effort it takes to learn to speak a language fluently, which is not really possible to achieve by using an app for 10 minutes a day, no matter what the advertisers are trying to tell you. The initial rush of enthusiasm can soon be replaced by frustration when one is inevitably not as successful as initially hoped. Language learning, as so many other types of learning, is a process that has its ups and downs. There are times when you feel on top of the world, understanding everything and feeling prepared. At other times, however, you feel like you've just not learned anything and all the previous effort was in vain. Often, the more you know, the more you feel like there's yet to learn. As I was progressing in my Chinese learning, I had these ups and downs daily, hourly, sometimes even within the same conversation. I'd struggle to find the right word, but a minute later I was able to speak pretty coherently. Whenever I came across this issue, I tried to use the downs as learning moments to remind myself that next time I will do better. And rather than instances of demotivation, telling myself that I couldn't do it. So every time I came across a hurdle, I told myself that language learning takes a long time. And as long as I take it one step at a time, I'm on the right path. Man man lai, as you can say in Chinese, slowly and surely does it. This brings me to the end of this episode 6. In the next episode, I'm going to continue looking at self-reflection with respect to different approaches to learning, learning styles. And I'm also going to discuss theories such as comprehensible input.